Love that montage. Shout to all the fearless ladies who have paved the way. We celebrate them. It's March 1st, the beginning of Women's History Month. Stephen A. Smith, Max Gellerman, I'm Molly Karen Rose. Hope you all had a fabulous weekend. And fellas, we got a lot to dive into, so let's do it. Could Russell Wilson be on the move? What? Who would have guessed this? So last week, Wilson's agent told our Adam Schefter that he has demanded a trade, but would consider playing for the Bears, Saints, Cowboys, and Raiders if a trade were considered. Even the mayors of New Orleans, I don't know if you guys saw this earlier, in Seattle, are making their pitch to let Russ cook. Meanwhile, listen to this. Hall of Famer Michael Irvin said, quote, quarterbacks suddenly have the power to leave a team, but that also means they have the power to come to a team. Russell Wilson wants Dak's chair. Hey now, Stephen A.
Yeah.
Should Russ want to play in Seattle?
Should he want to play in Seattle? Is that what you asked?
Mm-hmm.
No, he should not. If you read the reports and the things that have been said emanating out of Seattle, Pete Carroll, one of his sons is gone. The other one of his sons is a wide receivers coach. Obviously felt Russell Wilson reportedly is one of the people who feels like you can't tell them anything. That's not what we've heard about Pete Carroll. We know Pete Carroll to be a national champion as a collegiate coach. We know him to be a Super Bowl champion as a head coach. We know that he knows football, and we know that he's an exceptional coach who's done an exceptional job. But in the same breath, we always assumed that he was a player's coach per se, and that doesn't appear to be the case at this particular juncture. At this particular moment in time, Russell Wilson seems to be turned off by Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks organization. It wasn't an off-the-record comment. His agent literally gave Adam Schefter teams that Russell Wilson would be interested in going to after Russell Wilson had said what he said on the Dan Patrick Show. So you take all of those things into consideration, I would say, no, he shouldn't stay there. He's been there for 9 years. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's been to 2 Super Bowls. He's carried the franchise on his back pretty much for the last 5 years, and we all know this because that's when the Legion of Boom basically was, diminishing before our very eyes, and they were on their way out. So when I look at it from that perspective, I say, no, he shouldn't want to be there. Russell Wilson should want to go to the Dallas Cowboys.
What?
Quote, unquote. I mean, are you ready for this? Yes, the what? Dallas Cowboys. America's
team. You can't say that. You, yes, of all people, can't say the Cowboys.
Well, yeah, I can once you listen to my reasons. I can say that once you hear my reasons. See, when you have to understand, Max Kellerman. First of all, one thing. I just told you he's a Super Bowl champion. He's got a 98-45-1 record in his 9 seasons. That's more win than the Dallas Cowboys organization has had. I think they've got like 78 wins in that span. He's got 98 wins in the last 9 years, okay? And we also know the cachet that his talents would bring. But it's not even that. It's not even so much that. Max Kellerman, when's the last time the Dallas Cowboys have really been relevant? Quarter century, oh, wouldn't you say?
That level, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. And yet, everyone talks about them. We recognize the fact that Forbes magazine had them as the highest valued franchise in the National Football League, if not in all of American sports, at approximately $5 billion. We understand the billion-dollar playpen that is Jerry World, Jerry Jones, and the attention that he garners, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. Let's never forget that. We've got all of that going on in the backdrop of the star, the Dallas Cowboys playing on Thanksgiving, whatever. If you don't deserve any level of relevancy based on your level of production on the football field, and yet still you get it time and time and time again. If you're Russell Wilson, imagine how you would stand to benefit if you were a member of the Dallas Cowboys. You would obviously be in the midst of a marketing machine. You would receive your just due in terms of attention, in terms of cachet, not to mention the nationally televised games. The list goes on and on. You got a beautiful wife in Sierra who's an entertainer extraordinaire, okay? I have no doubt in my mind that all of this noise about Russell Wilson wishing to depart from Seattle has a lot to do with her, as well it should. Happy wife, happy life. Listen to the ladies, okay? Let's make sure we do that. I see it all coming together. If I were Russell Wilson, the ideal place for him to play, because he has nothing to prove. We know he's great. And we know he's going to continue to be great. And as a result of that reality, the bottom line is if you were playing for a team like the Dallas Cowboys with all the unwarranted attention they garner, he would actually make them relevant. He would actually make them, you know, valid in terms of their attention and the notoriety that they receive. And I think that in that regard, that's what makes it a winning situation for him. More so than anything else.
No,
that's why
all,
I mentioned the Dallas Cowboys.
First of all, you have a right to say he shouldn't stay in Dallas, but you do not have a right to say, you don't even have a right to say he should go to Dallas. Saying he shouldn't stay in Seattle, I get for the reasons you outlined. I disagree. I'll get to that in a second. But the Dallas Cowboys, Stephen A., I thought a black cat was running around that franchise. I thought they were cursed. You bring it up. Their record is 20 games worse than Russell Wilson's record, right? But look at the quarterbacks who've played for them. Tony Romo and Dak Prescott. Now, is Russell Wilson better than those guys? Has he been over that time? He has been. To the tune of 2-3 games a season? No. He doesn't give you 2-3 games a season better than those guys. What this indicates, Stephen A. Smith, is that he's in a winning situation. He contributes a lot to it for sure. But the Seattle Seahawks are basically a well-run, very well-run franchise, one of the best in football. Had it not been for the Patriots over the last, during the course of Russell Wilson's career, they'd be in the argument. They'd certainly be in the argument for the best team, run team in football. Certainly they are for the best run team in the NFC. So now you want him to go to the Cowboys? Perpetually dysfunctional team. Again, the difference in record, you can't just attribute to the quarterback. They've had good quarterbacks. How much of a premium he's going to give? Now, your point about maybe it's Sierra, maybe it's, you know, a career opportunity, legacy in terms of branding after his career. Point well taken. But is that more important to Russell Wilson than becoming great? You know what I think Russell Wilson wants? I think he wants to be the greatest of all time. Russell Wilson is insanely competitive. And if he were in a situation where year in and year out, you're hoping to be above 500, maybe you can win a playoff game, he'll be miserable. He may feel that that's the case in Seattle right now. And maybe in the last couple of years, it has felt that way. Well, they'll get to the playoffs and they'll lose because the O-line isn't good enough, or the O-line gets a little better. Now the defense isn't good enough. But this is a double-digit win team year in and year out. And that's not all because of Russell Wilson. It's because it's a well-run franchise. Careful what you wish for. You made more sense last week when you said New Orleans. If Russell Wilson's like, New Orleans, I think they're ready to win now. You put me on that team, it'll get them over the top. I can't really argue. I might say, hey, you got a good thing going in Seattle. You've won a Super Bowl there. You got to another. You may win another one there. You're still in your prime. But I can't really argue against the Saints. But the Cowboys and Stephen A., if he's upset about getting hit too much, that offensive line ain't the same anymore in Dallas. I don't get the Cowboys at all.
Well, that's because you're thinking football, which is what I was thinking when I mentioned the Saints. But clearly something else is going on here. As you've read the continued reports emanating out of Seattle, I mean, let's think about this, Max. They're a perennial playoff team. He's gone to 2 Super Bowls, won a Super Bowl title. He's playing for a coach that's well, highly respected in Pete Carroll. All right, we've recognized the fact that he's deserved the accolades that he has received, and he's recognized universally as one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League. And oh, by the way, the state of Washington, no state income tax. I mean, listen, there's no reason for him to leave from a football perspective. It makes total sense for him to want to stay. Yet we hear about the relationships. We hear that he wants out. Okay, you see the mayor of New Orleans pitching for him to come there. The mayor of Seattle's like, nah, step back. You know, he's ours, et cetera, et cetera. You got all of this kind of stuff going on. But the Dallas Cowboys were on that list. And if he's on that list, that tells me he's thinking about more than football. It also tells me his wife is playing a pivotal role, as she should, Okay? So all of those things taken into consideration, I'm thinking from a marketing perspective, clearly he's not satisfied. And he thinks there's a better place to be.
In
light of that, there's nowhere to go but up. Because you'd go to a franchise that hasn't done a damn thing in a quarter century. You're playing with house money.
That's one. What you just point out is legit. That's one. Marketing, the Dallas Cowboys, the brand is huge.
I'm not talking football.
Now let's talk off the field. That's one component off the field. But if another component is being respected, wanting input, and all that. Look what just happened to Dak Prescott with the Cowboys. Do you think he feels respected right now by this
team?
Not
at all.
I just don't get Dallas. I get what you're saying about the star, the Cowboys, the brand, but that's the only thing I see in Dallas for Russell Wilson.
Yep, Vegas, New Orleans, Chicago also in the mix as well. We shall see, fellas. Another superstar who's a little frustrated right now, rightfully so. That's Steph Curry. That's where I want to go now. So last night, LeBron and the Lakers put the smackdown on the Warriors in L.A. with Klay watching courtside, a 26-point win. Steph, talk to me.
We have to remember that even when we're playing well, we won three in a row. You know, teams still want to beat us and beat us bad. They still have, you know, a lot of memories from the last 5-6 years.
Stephen A., you think the Warriors are just going to make the league pay when Klay returns?
Without question. Without question. Let me tell you something right now. Once Klay Thompson returns, assuming, again, we're assuming health. You know, we're not debating health. There's nothing to debate about that. If they're not healthy, there's no go. But if Klay Thompson and Steph Curry on the court together and healthy, Warriors going to conference finals, at the very least. Warriors going to win 50 games, at the very least. The Warriors will unquestionably, we talk about the Utah Jazz being the best shooting team in the NBA. That wouldn't be the case if Klay and Steph were on the court. I promise you that much. That wouldn't happen then. You can book it. Let me tell you something right now. And by the way, this kid Wiseman, who's just a rookie, the number 2 overall pick, Zsa Pachulia and Andrew Bogut, he is not. He can actually play. I mean, not to say that they couldn't play at all, but they ain't no James Wiseman. This kid's got a tremendous upside. When I look at the team as presently constructed, if you told me that Klay Thompson comes back, but you still have a Kelly Oubre, and you still have an Andrew Wiggins, and you got a James Wiseman, and you got Pascal, and you got, you know, Draymond Green and these boys, with Steph and Klay healthy? Oh, please. You're going to the conference finals. Easily. And I'm telling you that right now. They understand everybody's going to come at them. When Steph is balling, it's a different game. When he's struggling a little bit, as he has over the last 7 or 8 meetings against the Los Angeles Lakers, where they've held him under 20 points, that's a different ball game. But when Klay and Steph are on the court together, this is the greatest shooting backcourt in NBA history, and Steph Curry is the greatest shooter since man was created. That's who he is. And Klay ain't that damn far behind, okay? I'm telling you right now, Klay and Steph get back together healthy, you're at the very least, conference finals.
They're not making the league pay when Klay gets back. That's different, Stephen A. Let's not... You're starting to move the goalpost about what make the league pay means. Like, are they going to win 50 games? Are they going to be a tough out? For sure. Might they, if they add the right pieces, win another championship eventually? Sure. But what the Warriors were, what Steph is talking about that stretch where people want payback, they were stomping the league, starting with that 73-win team, because even the year before when they won the title, Cleveland was going to beat them in the finals if Kyrie and Kevin Love were healthy for LeBron. I mean, they went 6 games without them. But that season, too, they were better than everyone else in the Western Conference. And then the following year, they smoked everybody else. And then they added Kevin Durant. And those days ain't coming back. I mean, if they're able to swing a move for a guy like a Durant-level player, or not that many who ever existed, right, to add to this team, okay, fine, those days can come back. But if we're just talking about the roster, more or less as is, and Klay healthy and Steph healthy, like Draymond Green is not what he once was quite. I mean, even just shooting Stephen A., and this predates any issues with KD or Klay in terms of injuries, Draymond Green was like shooting 33, 34% from three. Remember that one year he shot 38, 39%? He's shot under 31% from three since then. He does not shoot from the outside. The idea that you can play five out with Draymond, not really, not the way it once looked like they were going to be able to. So this is a different team, and this coincides, right? No Iguodala in his prime, was a great player and a big game player. So things have really changed. Obviously no KD, even if Klay comes back, he's coming back to a Western Conference that ain't your big brother's Western Conference. The Lakers are a powerhouse with AD. All these other teams have come up in the world. The, you know, if there's no OKC like there once was, don't forget OKC took them seven games when the Warriors had won 73 that year. Took them seven games at to Oracle in the Western Conference Finals. But look at all these teams. Denver's coming up. You mentioned Utah's coming up. The Clippers, it is a new day for the Clippers. The Lakers are the defending champs. They're never going to do to the Western Conference what they used to do. They're not making people pay like that anymore. It is a new time, Stephen A.
Well, you could say that. We don't know that definitively because, again, we'll see when Klay Thompson gets back. That's number one. Number two, the league is adjusted. What did the Utah Jazz did? After losing in the first round to Denver last year, they went out and they got some shooters. And they improved as shooters as well. Yeah, you got defense on the interior as well as on the perimeter with Gobert and Royce O'Neal. But in the end, you got guys shooting lights out, and the pickup of Bogdanovich was a big-time pickup. We recognize that. So you got people trying to emulate what the Golden State Warriors used to do. Even LeBron James, excluding the month of February, where he was god-awful from three-point range at about 16%, the bottom line is that he's been shooting better from the three than we've seen him do arguably in his entire career. So we're paying attention. But who are the originators? Who are the pioneers in a modern era when it comes to the three-point shooting artistry? That would be the Golden State Warriors. Now, in Draymond's case, he's got something to work on because what you pointed out, Max, in 2015, 2016, he shot 38% from three-point range. Since then, it's 30, 30, 28, 27, and it's now at 22.4%.
Oh. And you can't even say it's Klay's injury because it predates Klay's injury.
Well, I understand that. So that's something that's the impediment to Draymond. I think he does everything else great, but yep, shooting the basketball definitely is not his thing. In the end, though, what I think about is the presence of Klay and Steph and what that would open up for Wiseman, what that would open up for an Oubre, a Wiggins, a Pascal, or anybody else. I think about their shooting not just from three. I think about their shooting not just from the perimeter, but I think about what the near perfection that they put forth from the free throw line. I'm telling you right now, Max, I would sit here and I'd have a hard, hard time looking at the Golden State Warriors and definitively saying, ain't no way they get to the finals. Look, they might get to the finals next year if they're healthy.
Maybe, but I don't think so. Let's go over that roster that you mentioned. Wiseman is promising. He doesn't shoot free throws great, by the way, which may be a better indicator of long-term success from three, but he's shooting better already than we thought. I like Wiseman as a piece at the five. You're right. They have not had someone like that in the past. That's an improvement. Oubre's okay. Wiggins is fine. You know, not compared to his salary, but he could play. But back once upon a time, Stephen A., Steph and Klay were the undisputed best backcourt in the league. That's not the case anymore. You have Kyrie and James Harden. You have Dame and McCollum. It's all on the same level, and you could argue some better. You have CP3 and Devin Booker. You have other pairs that are comparable to that. Maybe not quite with the shooting, although some of them shoot very, very well, but they're comparable in terms of value in the backcourt. Now there's no KD on the team. And unless you have a piece like that, and there aren't that many of them, that's now gone. Draymond's not shooting. So you're looking at the rest of the roster, and you're going, that's tough. You're right. That's a 50-win team. That's a powerhouse in the West. But the days of them spanking the Western Conference the way they did are over.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, in the NFL, Drew Brees is retiring or not. His trainer, Todd Durkin, recently posted a video on Instagram that shows Brees pushing a weighted sled while Durkin uttering a string of superlatives, apparently things he hasn't seen from Brees before. On that note, we welcome an NFL insider, Kimberly Martin. Kimberly, thank you so much for being with us this morning, entertaining, educating us all morning on Get Up. I was watching you do your thing, so glad to have you with us as well. I will get to you in just a moment, but we're going to start with the fellas here. Max, do you think the Saints should want Drew Brees back?
No, I think the Saints should hope that Drew Brees retires. You know, you can keep doing the same thing again and again because it looks on the surface like the best option. Well, we think he's still better than Taysom Hill, say, or we don't really think Taysom Hill can be a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Okay, but neither can Drew Brees at this point. I'm sorry, but we've seen it too often now in the playoffs. The season may be too long for him at his age and his size. Don't forget, like Tom Brady, I talked about the clip and everything. Tom Brady's a big, strong guy. Drew Brees is a smaller guy playing a brutal full contact sport. And speaking of brutality, had all those ribs crushed in his lung punctured and everything. And I thought maybe there's a silver lining. Maybe he'll be more rested and won't look as bad as he's looked in the playoffs in recent years. Because I really looked at this Saints team and thought, this is the best chance he'll have to win a Super Bowl. This is it. And maybe the best chance he's had in years, given the fact that they had a number two receiver, they had a hot defense, they were probably the most well-rounded team of, until it turns out the Bucks at the time, and they had a tie score going into the fourth quarter against Tom Brady, against a team that they'd beaten twice already, the second time worse than the first time, couldn't get it done. Brady got it done. Brees couldn't, and he couldn't get it done because he couldn't make the plays. Let's just be honest about it. Drew Brees is one of my all-time favorites, but you got to be honest about it. Stephen A., you know what it's like? Sometimes you'll see a fight, a prize fight. I know you're a big fight fan, and a guy has trained a certain way to box responsibly and everything. It's just not working, and he gets back to the corner, and the guy's like, double the jab and do this and do everything, and you're like, dude, that ain't going to work. Look, even though it may seem foolish because you'll get knocked out even faster, you better throw caution to the wind because that's the only chance you have. The Saints, unlike the Steelers and a lot of teams, are built to win a Super Bowl right now. They're not going to do it with Drew Brees. So even if you think Taysom Hill maybe gives them a lesser chance superficially, even if it's Taysom Hill, at least he gives you a puncher's chance. Drew Brees, I don't think you have a chance to win a Super Bowl right now.
Well, I think you're wrong. I think they have a chance. Obviously, at age 42, you do need to be moving in a different direction. The problem is that what you're going to go out and get. If you're going to tell me I'm going to lose Drew Brees, who, by the way, completed 70% of his passes in the 12 games that he played, threw for 24 touchdowns, just 6 interceptions, that's not something to sneeze at. I'm certainly not going to accuse Drew Brees of being what he used to be, and I understand that. But as much as I like Taysom Hill, as much as we've not given up on Jameis Winston, assuming you could get him back and what have you, the bottom line is that what do you have? What's the alternative? I think based on what you have available to you, I certainly could see Drew Brees coming back. I certainly don't mind if he doesn't. Me personally, if he retired, I wouldn't mind that either. But I think that based on what your options are, I see no issue whatsoever. If the Saints sat up there and said Drew Brees is coming back, I don't think you'd see the mayor calling for Russell Wilson, even though Russell Wilson at this point in time in his career, particularly due to his mobility, not just his ability to throw the football, but his mobility, I definitely think you'd prefer him over Drew Brees. But I don't think you'd see public officials in New Orleans clamoring for somebody else's quarterback if Drew Brees, if everybody knew that Drew Brees was coming back. Because when you look at this man throw the football, the accuracy with which he does it, Michael Thomas didn't have the same kind of year because he was in and out this year. Emmanuel Sanders didn't have the year that we expected him to. And so we got to take that into consideration as well. Do I think that they could be better next year than even they were this year? Yeah, I think they could do that. And I think in the case of Tom Brady, you ain't beaten Tom Brady 3 times in the same season. You shellacked him 2 times in a regular season. Obviously, come playoff time, he got the better of you. You're going up against Tom Brady on 3 separate occasions, you know, and you beat him the first 2 times. Chances are he's going to get you once. And that's what happened there. And I don't think it was just about Drew Brees. I think it was about Sean Payton's game planning. I think it was about the lack of production this year from Michael Thomas compared to what we're accustomed to seeing from him. I think all of those things played a role. So I wouldn't give up on Drew Brees, but it's primarily because of the options that they have available to you. If you could get Russell Wilson, sure, you get him. But if you can't get somebody of that caliber, I'd say you stick with Drew Brees rather than handing the reins to Taysom Hill. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I wish this question was, should the Saints go after Russell Wilson? Because that's an easy one. That makes sense. I think the Saints are caught between a rock and a hard place because it's almost like Pittsburgh, except the money isn't the same with Big Ben. You know, I argued on Get Up a couple weeks ago or last week that, you know, I think that they're going to restructure Big Ben because what else are the Steelers going to do? What other options do they have? The Saints, though, they have Breeze. And a lot less, you know, financially, like a lot less money they got to spend on his salary. He just reduced it. The problem is the window is closing on this team. Maybe not in 2021, but thereafter. I think this is the year. If Brees wants to come back, God bless him. But like Max said, the injuries, I think at some point we're going to be looking at Drew and wondering, okay, is he going to be able to give you 16 games? I don't think he can. At some point, you know, you might have Taysom Hill having a start or Jameis Winston, who 5,000 yards, he's not that far removed from 5,000 yards and 35 touchdowns. So, he, you know, let's not throw Jameis away. But the options are just so bad that it makes the fact that this is even a question that shows where the Saints are. That 42-year-old Drew Brees, should he come back? That's what we're debating.
Well, I actually think Taysom Hill's a little slept on. Like, he was 3-1 as a quarterback. That was his quarterback record. He completed over 70% of his passes. Obviously, things are simpler in terms of the passing game with him. But it was, you know, it's not like he was throwing over 200 yards a game. He threw, you know, twice as many touchdowns as interceptions, though that wasn't a very high number. I mean, I think the difference between the Steelers and New Orleans, other than financially, Kimberly, is the New Orleans Saints are ready to win a Super Bowl right now. They need better quarterback play. I mean, they need a little more health, yes, but they need better quarterback play. And so you say, well, Taysom Hill's not going to be better than Drew Brees, but at least he gives you a different dimension than Drew Brees. As I said earlier, more of a puncher's chance. You know, you look at the Steelers, you go, ugh, what they got. They, you know, you might as well take Roethlisberger, but he ain't going to win a Super Bowl anyway. The Saints, you go, no, actually, the options they have behind Drew Brees are quite respectable, and they're ready to win now. So, Stephen A., I don't know. I think Russell Wilson, people might be calling for Russell Wilson in New Orleans anyway. In fact, when I heard the mayor, I was thinking, ooh, it's a little disrespectful to Drew Brees because it's not official yet. And then on the other hand, let's be honest, anyone at this point in their career especially would make that trade. Of course they would love to have Russell Wilson in New Orleans. Stephen A., as you argued last week.
Well, like I said, I'm not disagreeing with it. Ain't nobody saying that we'd keep Drew Brees over Russell Wilson, but you'd have to trade for Russell Wilson. And let's not forget, his contract is also incredibly attractive. Got about 3 years and approximately $7 million. That's bargain basement for star quarterbacks in today's NFL climate in terms of what quarterbacks are getting paid. So that's also another attractive situation to bring into the equation. In the end, though, the point is that you have Drew Brees. And I'm saying, based on the alternatives available to you, you don't summarily dismiss a guy that completes 70% of his passes on a year-to-year basis. The man doesn't make too many mistakes. Now, he's made some mistakes during the playoffs, and we get all of that. But there's something to say about giving you a puncher's chance, and he certainly gives you that because of what he produces for you during the regular season. And are we just going to sit here and ignore Michael Thomas? I love Michael Thomas. He's got mad game. A year ago, we were calling him arguably the best receiver in football, and he had signed a $20 million a year contract as a wide receiver. Well, guess what? He didn't live up to it this year, primarily due to injuries, no doubt. But we're just going to ignore that? We're going to ignore that the number one weapon that Drew Brees had available to him wasn't looking like himself for most of this year either? I don't think we get to do that. Am I wrong in saying that, Kimberly?
No, you're not wrong at all. And, you know, to Max's point about the Saints being a win-now team, and to then go with Taysom Hill, who, yeah, he was 3-1 as a starter, but are we really set on Taysom Hill? Are we really set on Jameis Winston? You know, this is a win-now team. If you slide Drew Brees back, I don't think he gives you 16 games, but at least the other guys, they've got a lot of free agent issues, a lot of free agent questions, and they're in salary cap hell at the moment. So if you slide Drew Brees back in and you say, okay, let's try to, with this roster, try to run it back, that gives you a better shot than, let's say, let's hope Jameis Winston doesn't turn the ball over to the other team 30 times. Let's hope that Taysom Hill protects the football a little bit better than he has been. But neither option, they're not good, guys. They're not good.
Guys, let just throw this out to end this segment. In his first 4 years in the league, Michael Thomas has played in at least 15 games a year. This year, he only played in 7. He had his first 4 years, 92 receptions, 104 receptions, 125 receptions, 149 receptions in 2019 for 1137, 1245, 1405 in 2019, 149 receptions for 1725 yards. This past season, he started 5 games of the 7 he played in. He had 40 receptions for 438 yards. Michael Thomas wasn't there this year.
That's a good point.
How are we going to look at Drew Brees and just ignore the fact? Michael Thomas really wasn't
there. I'm looking at the last, like, 4 or 5 playoffs with Drew Brees, though. You know, at a certain point, he ain't going to get you over the top.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
To the NFL we go. Minorities represent 69% of NFL players and 35% of assistant coaches. But yet only 3 head coaches are black men. Steelers coach Mike Tomlin, Dolphins coach Brian Flores, and recently hired Texans coach David Culley. Mike Tomlin expounded on this grave reality, telling the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "The optimist in me says things will get better, but there's been no evidence in the recent cycles to back that up. Without evidence, all we have is hope. We just haven't been able to move the needle." And he added that Bieniemy has yet to matriculate to the next level, that's a real head scratcher to him. Obviously, we know how successful Bieniemy has been. Stephen A., do you think star players, so we've heard from coaches, do you think star players need to be more vocal about the lack of black head coaches in the NFL?
Hell yes. It should have been the case. And I'm not going to call out names or whatever because I don't know the folks who may have done so or those who are doing it behind the scenes, more power to them. But when you talk about giving a voice to the voiceless, which is something that has been popularized throughout American history when it comes to discrimination or racist practices, the fact of the matter is that being silent or just operating behind the scenes, although that can be productive, you have to speak out at some point. At least somebody does. And the reality is that when it comes to black coaches in the NFL, as well as in the National Basketball Association, they're few and far between. Avery Bradley and Kyrie Irving are guys that I'd like to give credit to in the offseason before bubble play, because they were trying to bring attention to the paucity of black coaches in the National Basketball Association because the numbers were dwindling before our very eyes and we didn't hear anything. That's always been the case in the National Football League. As of right now, the year is 2021. Excuse me. There are 3 black head coaches. 3. That's it. Mike Tomlin, Brian Flores in Miami, and of course, David Culley, who's the new head coach for the Houston Texans, who's been in the league for 27 years before he got a head coaching job. Robert Saleh for the Jets, he came over as a defensive coordinator from the San Francisco 49ers to get the head coaching job, born in Michigan, raised of Lebanese descent, Lebanese parents, what have you. Not African-American, but nevertheless, it's a minority hire. Of course, the previous year, Ron Rivera, well-respected and recognized, got hired in the nation's capital by the Washington football team, but he was the only minority hire the year before that. The league is 70% black. It's a multi-billion dollar establishment. They're talking about how this league could generate in excess of $25 billion a year, at least before the pandemic, that's what they were talking. And yet, considering how popular this league is, nothing has happened. And no player says anything about it. The millions upon millions of dollars that they're making, the way they're set and their generations are set, somehow, some way, nobody has the courage to open their damn mouths and speak out about it. And if you remember, Max, I brought this up when it came to even Colin Kaepernick. When Colin Kaepernick took a knee, okay, everybody was in an uproar coming to his defense because he had been marginalized, because he had been essentially blackballed. Well, guess what? I got a slew of black coaches that could say this has been happening to them for decades, but no player said anything. And my last point, Max, Mike Tomlin has been in the National Football League for 14 years as a head coach. His record is 145-78-1. He's won 65% of his games. Max Kellerman, are you aware of any of his assistants, who've been hired?
Good point.
But Sean Payton got a tree, and Andy Reid got a tree, and the list goes on and on. I mean, Sean McVay. I mean, they got trees. They got proteges. They got folks sprinkled throughout the league getting jobs. Zach Taylor. No disrespect. Wish him nothing but the best in Cincinnati. He got a job there, okay? Where he come from? All I'm just saying is you just look at it, and it's like the unfairness is so flagrant, it's disgusting. And black players should be speaking up. Yes, long time ago.
Well, I agree. I think players, black and white, should be taking the lead here, as LeBron James and Chris Paul and others have done in the NBA. Let's keep in mind what we're dealing with in the NFL, though, Stephen A. Colin Kaepernick, and I mentioned this years ago while it was going on. Remember we did the show in L.A. with Snoop and Magic? Colin Kaepernick was kneeling broadly. I mean, narrowly, it's injustice in terms of law enforcement interactions with communities of color. But broadly, it's about systemic racism, right? And he hasn't had a job since then. He's been drummed out of the league unjustly. Doesn't have anything to do with his play. Right? So that's what the NFL does if you make too much noise about that issue. Now, you might argue, well, the way Kaepernick went about it, he touched the third rail, at least in terms of the NFL and their business, and there are ways of doing it without burning everything down. We could argue about that, but okay, let's say I concede that point. Yes, players should take the lead, but the power structure is completely imbalanced. I mean, the reason I think primarily that we see this is there's virtually no minority ownership in the NFL. And is that because the NFL is systematically kind of excluding or rejecting the attempts of minorities to own teams? Or is that because of our country's original sin? You know, you really want it. There's enormous economic inequity in this country based on the fact that black people were once slaves. And not only have there never been reparations made, but in which they are due, you know, which African-Americans are due, in my view, and would be better for us societally. But in addition to that, post-slavery, they were also systemically, excluded from the economy in many ways. And so at least the parts of the economy you want to be involved in. And so that's really what we're talking about. The NFL is a reflection of the country in generally. But more specifically, even when you factor that in, three African-American head coaches in a league that's 70% African-American? Yes, I think that the league should make this one of its priorities, Stephen A., you know, along with making money. Obviously, that's always going to be their priority. And player health, because that could be something that could affect their business long term. I think this issue can also affect their business because it's beyond the pale at this point.
Well, you've got white owners who hire people who look like them and they're more comfortable with. And we know the code language that they usually use to justify it. That's number one. Number two, you're essentially saying that you don't trust black men to be a leader of men, particularly of men who look like them and share their cultural black background. You don't respect it. You don't trust it. All right. You're more comfortable when you're playing that leadership role, which speaks to the kind of things that you just alluded to, Max Kellerman. And I don't bring up Zach Taylor to knock him. I wish him nothing but the best along with others. But the reality is when you look at the job that Eric Bieniemy has done, excluding this Super Bowl performance against Tampa Bay, the bottom line is that this is the third year in a row that he's had a top-rated offense and he can't get a job. He can't get a head coaching job. And then you look at the fact that in Kansas City, even though he's designing the offense, Andy Reid is calling plays half the time. That's being held against him. But in the end, what it comes down to is what I've said repeatedly on this show, and I'll close by saying this. When George Floyd had that knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, and people throughout this nation were lamenting what they saw, what I said to folks, when you saw black folks protesting in the streets throughout America, was that when people talked about they had enough is enough, they ain't just talking about brutality on the part of some police officers against unarmed black men. You were also talking from a figurative perspective in corporate America and other places where black folks continuously feel like we have that knee on our neck. We're marginalized, we're pigeonholed, we're diminished in a lot of different ways and not held with the same regard, and the level of meritocracy that's supposed to be taking place doesn't exist for us. And this is just the latest example. And the fact that black athletes who are elite and well paid don't have either the courage or the sensitivity to speak up about it, leaving it to folks like me and a few others and you as well, Max, is a damn shame. They make enough money. The dollars are guaranteed. They don't have to worry about it. Open your damn mouth. You speak about everything else, especially on Twitter and Facebook and all that other stuff. Where the hell are you? Open your damn mouth and speak up and show some damn courage.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.